It is Friday, October 19th, 2018. We're listening to The Trillium Sessions. First off, I want to give a shout out to Derek Nicoletto. He is responsible for our intro music. You can look at his work on DerekNicoletto.com. Thank you, Derek, for letting us use your work in our podcast. The three of us, myself, D, as well as K and R, have a rather long and wide-ranging conversation about political education amongst people generally. So yeah, listen in. But yeah, so I want to talk about political education, at least for a start to begin. Public education among the general American populace. Mm-hmm. You want to make some comments, Kay?
Well, your original idea that we were talking about, informing this idea for this installment of the show, was the lack of sort of initiative on the part of folks in educating themselves. Am I wrong?
Correct.
So, tell me more about that.
I mean, this, what I find interesting is that, like, we have people who label themselves conservative, label themselves liberal, label themselves libertarian and whatnot. But the thing is, they have no real, like, idea, for lack of a better term, of the philosophical underpinnings of, you know, set of labels. And I think it's important to have those, have that knowledge, because then a better understanding of not only your own views, but other people's views, and I think you can make a better argument for, you can better make one's your own case. Now, I think you can argue that the entire American system, the entire American political system, has been wrapped up in, say, neoliberalism, which I think is definitely a case that can be made. But even then, I think the argument can definitely be made that there are different strains of neoliberal thought within the United States.
Well, I mean, that's a simple enough observation that if folks who are trying to communicate with one another don't yet share a common language, don't yet share a set of defined symbols, verbal symbols, written symbols, written words that are defined, they're not going to make much headway. I would think that that's straightforward enough.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
Which is what you're saying. So.
You want to say something?
Well, let me just pursue that. So let's say we're talking about healthcare. It seems that, polls and public opinion studies show a lot of people, maybe the majority, are interested in a single-payer system because, people know how to, people seem to understand that and they can communicate it. You know, my child's sick, I can't pay for his medical expenses, so we need a system that other countries have. I'm trying to think of what the barrier is in talking about that. People know how to express that, I think, and talk about it, and that's a very important issue. So I'm trying to relate it to what you guys are saying about needing a common language. It seems in that case, at least, the language is clear enough. maybe I'm missing something, or I was wondering how what you're saying relates to what I, the example I gave, for example.
No, you're not missing anything.
Yeah, okay,
no,
right, okay.
No, it only relates
to
that idea that you just mentioned. It only relates in this one respect, that it is common in the discussion that of the kind that you just brought up, a discussion that surely can be had without resorting to political language.
Right.
That political language is resorted to. So for instance, in discussions concerning how to pay for healthcare, what kind of healthcare system would be most efficacious or appropriate for collective groups of different sizes, whole countries, municipalities, communities of different sizes, how to pay for it, how to structure it. Those conversations can be had, as you say, without resorting to discussions about political systems. But they rarely are. It is very common for these conversations to, I guess you could say, devolve, perhaps, into discussions about socialism or even free market trade.
I see. So you were talking about political systems.
Political and economic systems.
Oh, I see. Okay, I understand what you're saying. I understand.
So, for instance, and this is an extraordinarily common thing, at least in the United States, for conversations of the type that you're talking about, to rapidly move into conversations about so-called free trade.
So-called, yeah.
Right? So, so for instance, if I were to enter into a conversation about healthcare in the United States, it would be nearly impossible for me to do so without the conversation to include free trade, which then would almost never be excluding conversations about capitalism, not the same thing,
right?
Which then would sort of probably carry with it baggages and questions about socialism, which in the United States is not even a question of,
Okay, I see now what you're saying. I was trying to figure out what.
I wanted
to understand what you were saying. So I understand now.
Can these conversations be had?
With
excluding these terms, excluding these, absolutely.
Right. Right.
Are they? Almost never.
It's become, it's interesting, in especially modern day American politics, things have become extremely politicized to the point where you cannot have a basic conversation, generally speaking, without things turning into politics. Like you were saying, Kay, when it comes to, your kid is sick, they need to be healed, but that itself becomes a political conversation. It doesn't need to be. And then what frustrates me is that people will utilize terminology that they don't know what the hell they're saying.
Now you're talking about, quote unquote, the average person out there, not the pundits and the think tank people.
In general, those bastards have no fucking. I'll give you an example. talk about socialism, people go,
right.
As soon as you bring up the word socialism, you have one batch of people, you know, it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And you have one batch of people who go, it doesn't work. You have another batch who they like to go and post helicopter memes, which people don't know. They're referencing Chile's Pinochet, where he would literally throw leftist dissidents, and just we generally did not like out of fucking helicopters. Because apparently that is now humorous. Another batch, like DSA people, mm-hmm. who honestly, for the record, fuck DSA. Seriously, fuck those people. I'm not saying there aren't good people in there, it's just that, and this is my problem with them, the manner in which they use the term socialism is like how Bernie Sanders uses it, and how a lot of people use it, where it's like, socialism equals shit government does. That's the wrong answer.
Right.
You're politically, economically, theoretically, I'm going to say theoretically, I mean it's a political theory, and philosophically wrong on all counts when you go and say that socialism is how the our government programs. Mm-hmm. You know, it's things like that, and that's why I want political education. You also have people, with the Colin Kaepernick situation, people being like, well, no, if you protest the flag, you can't do that, you shouldn't be able to do that. You know, you protest the flag, you're just protesting your community. It's like, no.
Mm.
Clearly, you don't have a handle on the Constitution, you don't have a handle on the First Amendment. It's ignorance you haven't picked up. Ignorance in general pisses me off.
Well, I will have to say, though, I think we're conflating a couple of different things here.
Sure.
There's ignorance.
Right.
Okay? But I think with your last couple of comments there, mm-hmm. There's ignorance on the one hand.
Right.
But I think we've moved into ideological assertions. Right?
Oh, so okay. Your
beliefs are something completely different.
Because belief you can't. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Someone who believes, for instance, that Mr. Kaepernick is not within his First Amendment rights to express himself in this way, it doesn't matter whether they know what the First Amendment is.
Right. It's a belief.
Simply don't agree with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think they're wrong.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, they're simply interpreting the First Amendment differently, just as folks who know what the Second Amendment is, but ideologically they disagree with me, and maybe you, I don't know,
mm-hmm.
In giving the Second Amendment what I consider a novel and what I consider bizarre, in the Supreme Court's mm-hmm. latest ruling, which is quite novel and somewhat mm-hmm. bizarre, sweeping interpretation of the Second Amendment,
mm-hmm.
right? It's not lack of knowledge of the Second Amendment,
right,
which
right.
is the question here.
It's the ideological
right. Beliefs, it's a belief about the Second Amendment, or in this case, a belief about the First Amendment.
No,
I mean, I'm willing also to believe that there is a certain amount of ignorance, but folks who look at what Mr. Kaepernick is doing, you know, it's racism, it's beliefs about their interpretation of the First Amendment, it's some ignorance about what the history of taking a knee, the act of doing that, there is a certain amount of ignorance about the history of this act, where it comes from, there's a certain amount of ignorance there. Put it in a blender and you get, you know, you get what the response to this is. I mean, it's a complicated issue, but you know, but getting back to the political
education question.
Political education, you know, it's kind of interesting because I somewhat take Chomsky's view about these things, that it's a complicated picture because, you know, he's sort of famous for saying, look, you know, the information is there, but it's there for like a maniac like me. You know, you know, you go to his office and you can't even walk in the place. It's you know, so on the one hand, you know, American people are sort of renowned for their laziness, which I think is, I think maybe your point, you know, to a large extent.
Yeah.
But, you know, that is, and I'm not going to really fuck you on that one. I think it's partially true. But I think Chomsky is somewhat right in that a lot of things in the United States, there are systems in place to obfuscate.
Yeah, and confuse people. And
confuse, and obfuscate, yeah, and even, yeah, and even, you know, I don't know, what am I trying to say? Mislead. Yeah. I mean, the history books, they get you when you're young. And so
we are
a country of advertising. I mean, like history books in that are adopted for use in public education. I mean, history professors in college, in university in this country, I mean, it's a running joke that they have to de-educate and re-educate people entering college.
Basic thing, yeah.
It's
not really the...
It's crazy.
Laziness is one thing, but my attitude is this, and I think it kind of does link back to that Chomsky thing in a way, because my thing is, I'm like, you have more... Because most people, let's be aware, like I was saying this to a friend recently, let's be real for like 5 seconds, okay? Most people have cell phones. Most people have unlimited data on those cell phones, okay? You have more information literally at your fingertips than any other person at any other time in human history, okay? And you can spend all day finding, you know, what Young Thug was up to. No disrespect to Young Thug. But like, finding out what this celebrity is doing, this person is doing. Oh, Ye was just talking to President Trump. Okay, but like, if you can do all that, if you just carved out maybe 30 minutes of your day, do some serious research, you'd be, you know, you'd actually be doing yourself a bit of a major benefit.
Oh, I can't disagree with you.
It's just like, so then just go and do it. You don't have to be like us. You don't have to be like me. Because you know me. You guys are my personal friends. This is all I do. I'm a massive loser. This is all I fucking do.
That's it. You being facetious when you say you're a loser? You shouldn't be, because I'm rather impressed by you, quite frankly. Well, here, my take on what you're saying, whether it's ignorance or ideology or some mixture of the two, my reaction to these things is to ask, okay, well then, why? What's behind all of it? What's the roots of all this? Why is this happening? So just to jump into what you said, so people are on the cell phone and they're not looking up, you know, some document, some UN document to tell them what a war crime is or something. You know, they're not doing that. Okay, well, I could just think off the top of my head, what are they doing? And I know what they're doing. They're looking at sports. They're looking at entertainment. They're listening to music. I love music, by the way.
I'm not saying that, of course, I'm saying, like,
I understand. But what I'm saying, that they don't do that half hour of what you're describing. So my take on it is I don't get angry anymore about that, because I just say, okay, there's a reason why they do that. Let's look at the reason. And the thing you said about childhood, that's, you know, you don't, in a capitalist democracy, you don't really have to control people by force, because they just know to do it anyway. And childhood is a thing. I'll tell you, when I was your age, I didn't know the world yet, and I was sort of trapped inside the, you know, the narrow spectrum of left and right and Democrat, Republican. I was trapped in there, and I know why it happened, and I know what broke me out of it also. It's that it's just in the air you breathe. It's not even, you don't even think about it. everything, from what it means to work, what a job is, what a workplace is. You don't, if you're not lucky enough to have people around you to just get you to see something,
right.
It's very hard. It's hard to be alone doing it. If it's not around you, it's very right. difficult. And I think that's a big key as to why people become trapped in it. I can speak for myself. Mm-hmm. What happened was, it was interesting. I worked for a so-called defense contractor, a weapons manufacturer, although they made a lot of other things. But I worked on radar systems, which aren't the actual weapon that's delivered to kill people, but it's a support. Mm-hmm. Why did I do it? I remember what I felt at the time. I always said to myself, I didn't like war. I didn't like the idea of it, but I felt it was necessary. I believed it, you know, only because I didn't know anything else.
Right.
Everyone believed, and it's very hard to do something unless you tell yourself, I'm right. You know, you have to believe you're right, unless you're a psychopath. And that's how I felt. But what happened was something very interesting. I still remember it. There were waves of layoffs in this place. I don't want to mention where it was. It doesn't matter. It could be anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I got laid off. And when I was laid off, it completely freed me to think about stuff. It freed me. And I was almost, for whatever reason, I was very receptive to just trying to understand things. And by chance, I was going through the TV stations and I came on Chomsky's speech. And I listened to him, and I knew I was just, for whatever reason, very receptive to wanting, I was hungry to understand things.
Mm-hmm.
And he was describing what the role of the Pentagon system was, and it was like a curtain lifting. Mm-hmm. Now, I was in the right mindset, partly because I was no longer getting my paycheck from the people who make weapons.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's like that, one of my favorite phrases comes from Upton Sinclair, who said, it's hard to get a man to understand something when his salary depends upon him not understanding it.
Yeah.
So that was me. You know, that's what I think happens. It's very hard. So my point is, anyway, from there, it was after that moment, I started questioning things, and then it just took off. That's what I think is the main thing in our society. People, it's hard to, it's very, and I was lucky. I was lucky enough to come into contact with people who taught me things, and I started reading things. That in a way was luck, you know.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
but those are the conditions that allowed me to break out of that. But when you grow up, and you know, you have a different background than I did. You're at a younger age more aware of things than I was. But it's because you're born into it. It's even true of racists in the KKK. There are examples like that of people who have broken out of it.
Absolutely.
And they sort of, they're just, it's in the air you breathe. You're born into it. So we have to look at the conditions that make all that. That's right. And that relates to the thing we started talking about. We have to talk about systems of power.
Yeah, there's no question.
Right. Yeah, that's right. So
Chomsky himself talks about moral systems.
Right. Mm-hmm. So in our own way, I think we're trying to draw attention to things for people just to think about. You know, you do it all the time. I try to do it sometimes. And also if you're surviving, if you're just like...
Yeah, you don't have time.
You're exhausted.
Yeah,
you know?
Because like, you know, like I was talking to one friend who does kind of the same work I do, and when we're talking about this, and he's like, you know, it's a real blessing to do what we do, because like, most people work jobs, plural. Most people have kids, plural. You know, so when the weekend comes, or you know, 5 o'clock, you get off work, you don't want to do anything. You want to go. Drink beer.
Yeah.
Oh, Sunday comes. We can help the guys. We're gonna watch the game.
And you know,
can't really blame them. You honestly can because like.
And you somehow know you're being screwed by somebody, and then you start. You don't know what it is, so then that's where sometimes people just say, "Oh, it must be immigrants."
Yeah,
you're
like, "Well, what can I do about it?"
Yeah.
But I definitely do think that the aggression is like comes from background because like my thing was. In my house when I was growing up, my mom would have me, like, watch PBS documentaries and stuff like about like the Black Panther Party and stuff. And then I was a teen, it really became kind of more political when I was about 15 or 16. In general, I didn't have too many friends, and so I would be reading a lot. I say a lot, I mean like, you know how when you're in class and there are like these small minor breaks, I would break out a book and be reading. And so I would just read and read and read. And I think that definitely did a lot. Lots of reading. But I would say that at least for me the real pivotal moment came when I got to college. It was 2010. I was a freshman. I had just started. And I was an undeclared business major. I was taking this like business systems class or whatever, and they were like, okay, one of the projects was to make a PowerPoint. Okay, sure. So I asked my professor, I said, can I do the PowerPoint on an organization? He said, sure. I think it's maybe 17 or so, I've been following this website. I found out about this website called Global Research. It was this alternative media website. And so I got in kind of the director, Michelle Trzodowski. And I was like, hey, I'm doing this thing for school. Can I interview? He said, yeah. So I went and I talked with him. In the interview, he said that it was a pretty left-leaning website for the most part, but he was like, he doesn't care about political, like, what, like, viewpoint you're coming from. It was like, I just want good writing. So that got me to thinking. So I was like, you know, let me write something up. So I wrote this very, very brief article. I got some online friends to help me edit it. I submitted it, and then it got published. Then I just kept doing that. And I still did it. Not with Global Research per se anymore, but I just keep... Because the thing is, that's what made me change my major to political science. And the thing is that what's interesting is the degree, as you both know, has not done much for me. I throw boxes for a living. But what it did do is it really helps you hone your reading, your writing, especially your research skills, because like what you do is pretty much what I do is like you go through vast amounts of information and you have to separate everything like, okay, this is what's important, this is what is not important. Mm-hmm. And so you deal with like all the time.
So what I would just say, so it did do something for you.
Yeah.
See, we're taught to say it doesn't do anything for you unless if you don't earn money.
Probably.
But it did do something for you, I would just say. So you done good, I would say.
Well, I would say so, too. Yeah. I mean, look at the, we can return to the question at the top of the show, was political education or political knowledge, or acquiring political knowledge, which in the United States I think is, just shooting from the hip, is pretty dreadful. The state of it is pretty dreadful.
Yeah.
And, your point was, one of the measures of how dreadful it is the use of this common political language. And it's pretty dreadful. At least when I try to converse with folks. You know,
you're conversing on the internet.
Right.
The worst place.
Right. It is true that we can have conversations about policies, and we can remove the political jargon, right? Because like anything else, for instance, if we wanted to talk about environmental policy.
Mm-hmm.
I would hope that we could. The only jargon we should be using is environmental engineering policy, environmental science policies, jargon terms used in the biology of ecology and so forth. Those are that's the only jargon we should be using, I would think.
Right.
But we shouldn't shy away from that jargon. I mean, that has real use. That kind of...
The scientific jargon.
Yeah, the scientific jargon, yeah. That has real efficacy.
Right.
But you're absolutely right. We don't need to really be, I don't know, maybe... Depending how broad we're talking about, maybe we could capture a little bit of the
general
ideas,
ideas.
Right, I don't know. But nevertheless, but it is astonishing, though, how, just as an example, just the fact that people claim that they're concerned about socialist policy being implemented in the United States is
the first step to show real law, goddammit.
Or just socialism. It's just real law, just set that aside. We can just set that aside. But just the fact, I'll get to that in one second. Because let's just set the Sharia law thing on the back burner for a second. Because that's actually kind of interesting. Let's just set that aside for one moment. Because there's actually a corollary. Don't think that that's kind of crazy. The Sharia law thing is a crazy thing to expect, but there's a corollary. So let's just set that aside for a second.
Sure.
There's a corollary to that that's actually real and quite frightening within the United States. Let's just set that aside.
Sure.
But folks who actually, most I would think, I don't ask, but... Because they're not going to tell you, or it's just going to be kind of odd.
Yeah,
it's
going
to be an odd
thing
to bring into the conversation.
But
I assume that they have a sort of a right-leaning political affiliation. But just the fact that people are often afraid of the implementation of socialist policies in the United States shows you. Of the deep misunderstandings, I think, which is your point, not knowing, now you warn me often, do not enter these conversations, and I don't always, but like sometimes I do, and I say there are no, listen.
It's the internet. It is literally the worst possible place. Like, the only good place I found is a website called debatepolitics.com. And even then, you wouldn't get retarded. Like, bam! Were you about to say something, R?
Where and when to have conversations. I mean, if you're at a Trump rally, you're not going to talk about socialism. It's not,
no.
You'll get lynched. Or you'll get beaten or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, one-on-one, it's like if I was having a conversation, I wouldn't necessarily start by saying I support socialism. I would say, I think, and this is usually the way I would say it, I'd like to see, I think people should have a meaningful role in decisions that affect their lives. So that's like a democratic kind of principle. So I think that should expand into as many areas of life as possible, including the workplace.
Yeah.
That's socialism to me. So I would just explain, one-on-one, it's probably easier to talk to someone and say, well, if that's what you mean by socialism, an authoritarian regime, that's not what I mean by socialism. You just explain what it is you're trying to say. It was like that book I once mentioned called Private Government.
Hmm.
I love that because a corporation is a private government.
Effectively,
so that's easy to understand because when you say, well, do you have freedom of speech in a company? No.
No.
No. Do you,
it's quite authoritarian.
There's top down.
Totalitarian, I would argue.
Yeah. It,
No, he said authoritarian. I would argue. First, I would argue totalitarian.
Okay.
Try taking a piss and not... Right. I'm not splitting hairs. I'm trying to argue.
It is splitting hairs, but
okay. Whatever word we decide on, right. Yeah. The orders go top down. You know, they give you a little freedom to do things like you could have your own little section of a store, you know. Yeah. You know, so they let you do stuff. And that's nice, yeah, you know. Yeah. But you don't. You don't have say over the business decisions. So mm-hmm. that's I'll be conservative, call it authoritarian. Okay? so it's a private government. And people, I think people understand that. When you get them away from the rally, mm-hmm. and you drop the rhetoric and the political polarized jargon, you just tell them the idea and they say, well, and I've talked to people like that who are in favor of the private government, but they'll agree with everything I say about what it is. So that's progress, because at least they're acknowledging, yes, of course there's no freedom of speech, but the company wouldn't work if you had freedom of speech. And then at least you're now discussing yeah. an issue, at least.
True.
You know, I don't know, okay, then at least we've clarified what I would mean by socialist.
Mm. I agree with everything
yeah,
you just said.
Right, yeah.
Right.
Like if somebody asks me what I am, I don't like labels, but I'm sort of like a democratic socialist with small d and s. Just that's just the idea, yeah. You know. And so if someone asks me, I'll tell them what I mean by it. I don't like what the Soviet Union was under Stalin, for example. That's not what I mean by socialism. Okay? You know, yeah. So I tell them what I mean. So I think if you just talk about the ideas and be cautious about jargon that has different meanings to different people
right.
You make some progress. One-on-one, I find it's easier to talk to people.
I put up a post a while back on Facebook, because the thing is, I have to say, you guys know, I post political stuff on Facebook. Duh.
No.
I know. It's a shocker. Shocker. I know.
Is that you? I didn't know that was you. Was yeah. I thought it was some guy.
Yeah. But, The thing is, I've had people unfriend me, and then I'm like, I understand, but at the same time, it's like, I don't, to me, it's dumb, because like, I see wild shit all the time, but I'm like, whatever, I ignore it. But on top of that, my thing is this, I don't really care what you post, as long as you're not, as long as you do not violate my core values. Like, you know, I'll be like, yo, those Nazis are cool, or, hey, what about those Jews? That's where we get into problems.
Yeah.
But I put up a post and I was like, you know, if you disagree with what I post, if you agree with it, if whatever, like, go and shoot me a private message. But the thing is, especially in online spaces, what I find generally is that, because Facebook is effectively a public forum.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess when people argue things in public, they may, in private, they may be willing to make some concessions, they may be willing to make some nuances, things of that nature, like the very stuff you're talking about.
Yeah.
The thing is, when you're on Facebook, and you feel everyone else is watching, what do you usually do? You double down. You triple down. You quadruple down.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know.
Well, I don't, but I understand.
I try not to, and I'm aware, you know, I'm aware mm-hmm. of the tendency to be aware of who's watching.
Yeah.
But I try to be conscious of that and correct mm-hmm. for it.
And so my thing is, I'm like, you know, a lot of these performative actions and crap like that, I'm like, just talk to me.
Yeah.
Because I think that you can have a much, like you're saying, exactly what you're saying, I think you have a much more meaningful yeah. and important conversation one-on-one where you're willing to be like, oh, so that's what you mean? Or, okay, I didn't understand this. Or, okay, I didn't see where you were coming from. You right. know what I'm saying?
A lot of it's misunderstanding, and you just clarify it.
Right. But that's...
Yeah. Well, they clarify for you, yeah.
Well, what you were mentioning yeah. just in your last comment, that is how I approach it. I don't use terms.
Right.
The terms... What I was talking about earlier, when I brought up when folks are let's say worried
mm-hmm.
about the implementation of socialist policies, this is just an example.
Yeah.
In the United States,
mm-hmm.
when and this is a common, this is a common.
Yeah.
You know, it often reaches. The sort of a moral panic level of, you know, and so the misconceived idea of the word socialism is all they have. Okay? And as you say, if you can sort of formulate an explanation, not of the word, but of just
the idea.
What ideas can we work with here? Yeah. Let's describe the realities on the ground. And if they can get a hold of, what does it mean to go to work?
Yeah.
And what do we have here? What do we have to work with? Now, if they can get a hold of that, great. If they can't, and I have known folks who cannot, explaining things just, you know, or speaking with them on with those shared facts, just as you explained earlier.
Right.
I have known folks who cannot or will not, I should say will not, because it's at that point it's a willful, this is a person I'm thinking of who, a handful of people I'm thinking of over the years I've spoken to about this subject who are just like us. They've worked in jobs just like us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So certainly we share this set of experiences delineated here. I mean, this is not not exotic.
Right. Yeah.
We don't need to use our imagination. These
This
is a common set of facts that we can that all three of us and them they can access these facts through experience. And they refused to, it was an absolute decided thing that they refused that they were facts. They refused to acknowledge that they were
facts.
That this was the reality.
Oh, I see.
And, you know, in that case, you can't really do much with that. Again, that's an ideological.
Yeah.
You know. Now, what I was going to say about the panic about, I mean, that's a crazy, the thing about Sharia law. That's
madness.
It truly is madness. However, there's kind of a crazy corollary to that, which is actually real, which is the religious courts, which we do not recognize in the United States. Mm-hmm. I mean, neither our criminal nor our civil law acknowledges religious courts in the United States. I mean, it's clear. However, great deference is given the Catholic Church's courts. I am prepared to say that radical deference is given to the Catholic Church's internal court system.
Go on.
Expound
upon this. I personally don't know. Expound upon it.
Yeah, I mean, I will grant that lately, in the last maybe 6 to 8 months, that has changed in some states, because there's been attorneys general maybe 3 or 4 states, and I don't know the details. Maybe it's because those attorneys have changed hands, or maybe some other things have changed in those states, which I can't talk intelligently about. Maybe some laws have changed in those states. Maybe some codes or, you know, have freed them. Maybe some governorships have changed, which I don't think they have. Maybe some internal politics has changed in ways that I don't understand in those states. But they've become much more aggressive in a few states.
So do you have an example? Because I don't know about this either.
Until just recently, there's been a monumental amount of foot dragging the church has basically been just, you know, sending letters saying, you know, we are investigating these.
Oh, right,
these,
yeah.
These, right, right.
Okay, well, yeah, we caught this guy doing this, and we've just transferred him.
Oh, so that's what the courts are sort of, have been going along with?
Yeah, we've tried this person.
I see.
And that has gone on, in the 60s, 70s, 50s, 60s, 70s. 80s, 90s, and it was only, you know, the late 90s to 2000s that this really, you know, I mean, I'm prepared to say that it is really only that it was Christianity that You know, if had this happened in any other religion, that this would not have.
Oh no.
Yeah, so the secular courts are less tolerant now about all this. They're cracking down a little more.
Well, the secular courts are the only recognized courts in the United States.
No, so that's what I mean.
So I mean, it's you know, had this been a religious court system in any other religion,
right.
there wouldn't have been 2 weeks of this business.
But what you're saying is the courts now are being
in
more,
some
more
states,
in some states.
In some states. In a handful of states, there has now been, you know, a fairly robust change of pace, literally in the rate of arrests and investigations of priests and their oversights. But that's very recent. That's in the last 6 to 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
It's been all over the news. I follow this fairly closely, and it's strange because it's also been that increase has been international. So, for instance, in northern India, there's been an accompanying crackdown in northern India.
Catholic Church?
Yes.
Oh.
In northern India, they closed 2 orphanages run by Catholic nuns for selling infants.
I think I read that. Yeah.
Which they had been doing for decades.
Oh, sure.
That had nothing to do with the Catholic court system, which was my comment, because I'm talking about Sharia, which is hilarious because, you know, over here, my comment was, because I don't want to get off topic, my comment was about the ignorance of political knowledge. Mm. And on the one hand, people have this moral panic about, you know, implementation of Sharia law, which is, there simply is going to be no implementation of Sharia law in the United States. It's crazy.
Yeah.
There's no. However, oddly enough, we have had not only the implementation of the Catholic court system, but absolute just sort of kid gloves.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, even though we don't recognize the findings of religious courts in this country, we do not recognize that.
Yeah.
But there's been almost no. I mean, it's. I mean, but no moral panic over that. None.
Right.
Not even now. Yeah. I mean, we you know, it's in the news and people say, oh, well, what a shame.
Yeah, so
and,
bad.
You know, I hope they figure that out soon. Okay.
But it is.
You know, like...
I mean, I don't completely... I mean, it is a whole... As I read this stuff, it's staggering the culture inside the church that's been going on.
Yes.
I don't know a lot about it, but it is quite staggering.
It's,
you know?
It's what I want to focus on...
Yeah.
What's striking
right,
is the difference in moral panic between something that is merely sort of
Muslim, as opposed to an
abstract worry,
mm-hmm.
right, of something that hasn't happened, and every fact suggests that it won't ever happen, to something that has happened, has been happening for decades. May have been going on since the formation of this country. Catholics have been in this country ever since. The Catholic Church has been in this country ever since its formation. And yet, even folks in my community of Catholics and ex-Catholics, of which I am one, who follow this closely, of child sexual abuse within the Catholic Church and the Catholic Church's quote-unquote trying within the Catholic court systems and the turning away from it by the actual secular courts. Yeah. And it's the most you get out of people is, even within my community of people, the most you get out, that's an outrage, and that's really sad, and really, oh, that's awful.
Yeah, I'm curious.
It's absolutely astonishing.
I'm curious, could that partly be... Because to acknowledge it fully and face it directly means having to look at your whole past as part of,
there's no question.
You know, it's like it's too, you know, it's easier to push it aside a little.
There's absolutely no question.
Yeah, otherwise, it'll shake you up.
We do not do self-examination here.
Right.
Don't do that.
Right.
Oh, no, there's no question that's
right.
the truth.
And the thing about the fear of Sharia, but you know, you can't, fear of the Soviet Union is no longer around, so it was replaced by fear of terrorism and Muslims and immigrants. So it could be part of that. You know, anything having to do with Islam is, you know,
I mean, you could implement Sharia law. You could do it, and you could have the same phenomena of sexual abuse going on within it.
Yeah.
And if you looked at the numbers, it would still be infinitesimally small compared to the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
Just on sheer numbers.
Right.
Yeah. So I mean, like, there's just no possible universe in which these two problems you'd be justified, and it's just an oddball scenario we have here.
You know, could I go back to the first point you made? One was about how talking to people about the workplace situation, they just don't want to hear even the facts. Remember, that was I was just going to say that I think that in part has to do with the quote by Upton Sinclair about when you're in the system, you don't want to face, because once you do that, you have to start asking questions, and it's just hard to go to work for some people, at least. Not for me. I'm very cynical about what I do, because I just understand it. But it's hard, especially if you become a manager, because then you have to sort of internalize the values of the system. Yeah. So when I come across that again, I come back to, I understand why they feel that way, because it's in the air you breathe. You just learn it from a young age. That's the way things are, and to question it is, it sort of shakes your foundations, and I understand that, and so I say, okay, that's the thing we have to face, and just figure out how to address that resistance. It could also be fear of you don't want to start thinking that way because you're afraid of losing your job and all that kind of stuff. Could be. So, but anyway, I always go back to, okay, so what's the cause of that person not wanting to face the facts? And then I say we quote unquote have to address the cause, why that happens, what brings that about. So I tend not to get angry or upset with people as individuals anymore, because I say, okay, they're that way for a reason. They weren't born that way. They were, there's something that made them feel that way. So let's look at what it is. And if I were them in their situation, their life experience, I might feel the same way. So I don't feel superior. You know, it's just, but I understand the anger still. I get frustrated too, but I have to catch myself sometimes and say, okay, look, you know, anyway.
No, it's not something that's superior. It's just something just like, something that's just, I don't know if it was, you guys know me, I don't do ego.
You're like,
stuff.
You're Jack the Ripper. No, you are Jack the Ripper. And I never turn my back to it. Never.
But, my thing is, again, what you're saying, I'm reminded of this Malcolm X quote, where he says something you're saying, of don't look down upon people who are not the same intellectual. He didn't say, because I'm not paraphrasing, but like, giving the general gist of the quote, which is, don't look down on people because they're not at the same intellectual level as you, because there was a time when you were not where you were.
Right.
You know? I'm looking down on people per se, but it's just general frustration.
Oh, absolutely. Of course. It's hard not to be frustrated.
Yeah, I'm not like, oh, I'm so smart, like, no. But, you know, it comes from, like, I want people to know, which is why I do stuff like this, because it's not coming from a place of teacher, student, I'm learning along the way as well. It's coming from a place of, I don't really necessarily care if you even agree with me. It's just, I want you to think.
Yeah.
I want you to be like, okay, I'm going to get those hamster wheels spinning a little bit. That's all.
And then once you get those wheels spinning, then it can take off, but you got to get them to start questioning things.
Yeah.
You know, people often don't question, as you might have noticed.
Well, I think, you know, we spent a long time in this country. I'm a little heartened that this may be coming to a messy end, but these things are messy. But I think we spent a long time in this country, maybe since World War II, perhaps, we've been in this sort of consumer-driven drug sleep. You know,
it is a drug.
It is, and it really intensified in the 80s. I would argue, the late 70s through the late 80s. I would argue, in fact, there's a good book called The Narcissism Epidemic. And it's written by two research psychologists. And it is not a self-help book. It's a chronicle of, as they say, not narcissistic personality disorder, although they do touch on that subject, but narcissistic-like symptoms in the broader population.
Mm.
Now, their focus is not what I'm talking about.
Mm.
Right, not this political malaise, but it goes hand in hand with this idea of an inward focus.
Yeah, it touches on some level with it's been intensified due to the neoliberal policies because it's all about, you know, it's all because as we all know, neoliberalism is about the individual. You don't have a job, that's your fault. If you succeed amazingly. Oh, well, Jeff Bezos just works hard.
Yeah.
Mark Zuckerberg just works hard.
This is nonsense. Yeah, this is crazy.
What do you mean, man? They're just good old-fashioned, hard-working Americans.
Right. I mean, but in no empirical...
evidence suggests that.
In no empirical sense can this be a justified conclusion. Right. So for instance, if someone says, look, you know, Microsoft founders are wealthy because of their hard work, but this is...
It's factually inaccurate.
It is factually inaccurate.
Demonstrably so.
I mean, it's factually inaccurate, in at least one important way.
Mm-hmm.
That they're receiving a what appears to be an infinite return on a finite
amount of labor. Yeah, well, I like to deal with people.
Now, there are many other reasons, but let's just
focus on the labor issue. Yeah.
Right. Now, all this plays into the subject of this podcast, which is ostensibly, the why don't people know more about their political ideas?
Hmm.
Like, so I guess I know a couple of people
who
really, really go out of their way
to avoid it.
To avoid political ideas, or to have political ideas.
But isn't that a political move in a sense?
You're right. I mean, so in a sort of epistemological sense, you know, you're right. Like, you know, so if you decide, you're using your means of thought
to avoid
having these thoughts. You're saying, okay, look, I'm going to think about something different.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you're right, I suppose.
I know some people, myself, who are pretty apolitical. And it is interesting because the thing is, I want people to know more just because, like, at least for me personally, it's just like, well, it's something you should want to know.
Wait a minute. You're saying that when you say they are apolitical, you mean the way they think, their thinking is apolitical, and they're...
Anyways, yes.
Yeah.
Like they...
Because people are not apolitical.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What they do is not apolitical. Let's just get that straight.
Oh, of course.
Right? Right?
Yes.
That's off our desk, right?
Yes. I think it's, I want people to know more, because, like, I think that, you know, you should want to know, like, okay, this is society, like, what kind of systems do I live in? How did this thing come into being? You know, for me, it's just general curiosity. But in a way, like we were saying, I think it comes back to, what about your maybe your upbringing or just your life? Because, like, for me, I'm the kind of person, I enjoy knowledge, I enjoy learning for the sake of learning. I don't mean in terms of, let me go to a classroom and learn from a professor, although I have mixed views about it, let's just say.
Well, let me ask you this, though. To what extent do you think it is sort of an ethical responsibility to have political thoughts?
An ethical,
because we've already established people do things
that are political.
You cannot escape that. I don't want to hear it. Like, people are political beings.
Oh, yeah.
That's all there is to it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when people say, I am not political, no, wait a minute, are you talking about your thoughts?
Or your actions?
You can choose not to think political thoughts. I believe.
Yeah.
But you cannot choose to be an apolitical being.
Exactly.
That's just, if you go to the store and buy something.
Yeah, that's right.
Or go to a hospital.
Exactly.
Or go to a baseball game.
Yeah.
Or make choices or join, you know, the army or something that. Okay. You are being political.
Or expect the emergency room to treat you.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Precisely. Yeah. You are being political.
Oh, you support gay marriage, or you support, you know.
Or if you yell at somebody across the street from you.
Yeah.
If you go to your neighbor and knock on his door and yell at him, you are being political. Yeah. That's all there is to it.
Or say, I can do on my lawn what I choose. And
if you assert a right of that type, you are being political.
Freedom,
But that's the question that I have for you.
Level
is it ethical, or even, I mean, some people might even call it a moral.
That's
a
good point.
I think that's a bit much. That's a bit stronger. But I mean, do either of those appeal to you?
Yeah. For me, on a personal level, I do think it is ethical in a number of ways, because the thing is that when I was saying when we went to New York, right, I find it incredibly frustrating to see homeless people when we know for a fact there are more empty homes. When I say homes, I mean actual
units,
houses, and apartments. Basically units to live in.
Yes.
Well, there are more empty units to live in than there are homeless people. So why do you not just take the homeless people, put them in said units?
Right.
So, I mean, I view it as a moral thing. And I think that on some level, my being black has to do with it, just because when you live in a system such as the United States, which is a very racialized system, whether people want to acknowledge it or not, very racialized, I think that you... Not everyone, but some people are more attracted to learning about these things simply because, in some ways it can affect them on a larger level.
Yeah.
Interactions with the police, interactions with capital, in terms of if you're hired, if you're not hired, just very simple things, you know.
Yeah.
You look at, a while back there was a Huffington Post article noting that, people's names. There are a number of articles about just names. You have a more Latino or black, that's there's, you know, name, then you probably will not be hired. I've experienced it myself in the sense that, you know, you see my first and last name, look at my resume, look at my grades, and then you see me
Yeah.
I've seen it in their eyes.
Huh. Oh, I don't doubt that at all.
You know? Like a... You know, you can see it. But I do think there is a level of ethics to this, because I think that you... My thing is this, and in general, I was raised in this conventional thinking, that if someone needs help, just, you know, I think that you, on some level, if you can, you know, not everyone has a, you should hope, you know.
Well, what about the political knowledge?
The political knowledge, I think that people should, I think it is ethical on some level, because by, you can utilize this knowledge to go and either improve people's lives or, you know, empower them or disempower them. And it affects not only people in a broad sense, it affects you on a personal level as well. By the way, it is ethical to go and learn about these things.
Right. So what if someone says they don't want to learn about, they don't want
to learn
about politics, but they're perfectly fine with doing good for people.
Well, the thing is, doing good for people, one, like we're saying, is a political act, but...
Oh, yeah, that's clear. Yeah, that's clear to me.
More importantly, you are not wanting to learn about politics is, on some level, unethical, simply because so much of what goes on in society, and especially historically speaking, is political in nature. So in your, I don't want to think about politics, you are actually doing a disservice to your, well, I want to do good to people.
You're saying that they're doing what's worse. You're saying they're doing harm.
Well, yes.
Yeah. It's worse than not doing. So it's even worse than not doing good. They're doing bad.
If we're looking at magnitude, right?
Yeah.
You go and give the homeless person money, I think we all agree, that's a positive thing. That's a good thing.
Yes.
But that affects that, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 people you do it for.
Right-wing Republicans might do that.
Exactly.
You know,
when we're talking about magnitudes, your voting politics affects a much larger group of people. Mm-hmm. And that can have negative effects on a much larger group of people. So just in terms of...
That's clear enough.
If you don't learn a certain amount, you're limiting what you can do for people.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I mean, especially, you know, well, I don't even have to explain that.
That's clear enough. Like, so if someone says, I vote, for instance. If they say, are you a voter? Oh, yeah, I vote in every election, mm-hmm. big and small. Mm-hmm. You say, but do you learn about politics? No, I don't learn anything. I make it a point not to learn, you know, in fact, we have a friend who absolutely asserts.
They don't want to learn anything.
They are, not only do they not want to learn anything, but they are someone who is, like, in thought anyway, completely apolitical. Like, and not,
you know.
Deliberate.
Okay. And absolutely. What's the reason? I'm curious.
It's complicated, but absolutely, like anything having to do with the adult world, like absolutely.
Well,
you know, yeah. So just putting that out there. So in that sense, you know. But then let's say that same person goes and votes. So, well, that's a very clear. That's clear enough.
Yeah.
That might cause harm.
Oh, because they don't know.
Because they don't, you know, like, exactly. if you don't know, you don't inform yourself.
Well,
and that gets back to, like, well, you know, okay, I'm going to vote against the person who proposes healthcare for all, like the public option, because I don't want socialist medicine. If someone told me about it,
I think it is an ethical question. I mean, in a good society. I'm being very abstract here, and I'm not being preachy. I'm just it's just a simple way of putting it. I don't know.
Preach, how else, preach.
That in the kind of society I'd like to live in, everyone will be concerned and has a responsibility to do what they can, and that involves learning about all sorts of things: politics, culture, economics, and. But, you know, if someone doesn't want to do that, then again, I go back to, okay, what's going on?
Yeah, why don't they want to do it?
Yeah. So let's look at that. Because I, you know, instead of just doing this to the person, which doesn't do anything. So, okay, what's going on? You know, so apathy, ignorance, that has roots, you know.
Advertisers
contribute to that.
The system contributes to it.
The whole system.
Could the apathy
turns people into that?
Mostly, well,
you know.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah,
mostly,
right. So I would just say.
Mostly them.
But regarding ethics, yeah, I think it is. I do think it's an ethical issue. Yeah, I think that I want to be someone who makes at least, you know, helps in improving things. So I want to contribute to that. So that is an ethical thing, I think. It's a simple answer to your question.
Yeah.
I think it is.
Yeah. I lean to that area simply because if you... I'm a utilitarian in ethics. And so, I mean, simply put, if you... Like, so for instance, if you... you can get right down to the smallest act.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say if someone is lying on the street, and if you go and I don't know hardly anything at all about aiding someone
medically. Right, right.
So like if I go up to someone and they are face down and they're still alive, I guess I can determine that.
Let's hope so.
Minimally, I can.
Uh-huh.
I turn them over, which I probably shouldn't be doing, but so I do that and I determine if they're still alive. And, you know, if I go any further in that, out of ignorance, I could easily either kill or injure them and make things worse.
Right.
And that is why I lean towards both of your views on the matter, because and view it as an ethical or even maybe even moral issue, because it's really just a version of that.
Mm-hmm. You know, if you're acting out of
a lack of knowledge.
Oh, right.
You know, you know, if you say, well, I'm going to go do this. Do what exactly? Well, I'm going to go vote, or I'm going to go be a teacher. Or I'm going to help my neighbor with something that I don't know anything about, but I'm going to go help them anyway. Or I'm going to go, I'm going to go do this, but I don't know anything about it.
You know what to do and what not.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, yeah.
You know, that to me just sounds like a recipe for disaster.
Yeah,
unless there's someone there who can help you do things, on the fly, but a great many things that you can do in life cannot be done in that way.
Oh, yeah.
And wisdom is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I mean? So in other words, I fear that that's what's going on in political life in the United States where folks are like, well, someone just told me that...
And also,
they're doing politics on the fly.
Yeah.
Well, someone just told me that they're going to take my health care away. Or someone just told me that they're going to, I don't know.
Do whatever.
It's going through the community like wildfire. You know, like it's...
The thing to do then is to check up on it, see if that's correct or not. You know,
right.
Someone told me.
And what I find interesting is that, especially since the last election, so much is motivated by fear. Like, my entire 2016 election was fear. Oh no, Trump's gonna get elected. Oh no, Hillary's gonna get... It's fear. And the thing is that doesn't help. Like, in general, when you are afraid, when you're like... Because a lot of these people seem to be like, piss your pants,
Well, it's
holy mother of God.
It's a way to make people do things.
I'm scared.
Well, here's the strange thing about what you brought up.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's like the Sharia
courts
versus the odd thing is that there are things to be concerned about, possibly even afraid of. I don't know. But it's the wrong things.
Oh, yeah.
It's really strange.
Well,
not strange. Yeah. It's quite calculated.
Well, that, like, these people are, somewhat of it's fear-based, and people are making these decisions out of fear. And when you're afraid, you usually don't make the best decisions.
Oh, almost never.
Rational decisions.
Oh, almost never. Never rational.
It's like someone having their hands around your throat. They're squeezing. Like, you're not...
But here's the thing. You know, Trump is very instructive because... You know, there are things to be concerned about, and with Trump, there are things to even be afraid of. There was almost nothing to be afraid of with Hillary. There were things to be concerned about.
Deeply.
And you brought some of them up. You know, there were more of the same, really, mm-hmm. as you said,
mm-hmm.
Especially on the foreign policy front. But the strange thing about the things to be quote-unquote concerned about and afraid of with Trump, the strange thing about them is that when people said, okay, here's what you have to be afraid of with Trump, the odd thing about them, there are two things that were strange about the things that they said about Trump, and they're still saying about him,
mm-hmm.
that you have to be afraid of. Here's the two odd things, the way I see it, is that A, I came way too late. You know, these things were obvious long ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's really strange to me. In fact, journalists have been writing about these things for decades.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, his Russian connections with the Russian mob have been written about by award-winning journalists for decades. It's really strange to me. When now people are saying,
so who was saying this now as opposed to 2 years ago, for example? I mean, there are people...
A number of
1998! As opposed to 1998!
Uh-huh.
So let's just get that off our desk. I mean, these are people...
Pundits, you mean? And,
not pundits, journalists. People doing really good work.
Oh.
People, you know, kicked out of his office and in the late 90s for getting a little too close to people who worked for him who were caught running drugs for the Russian mob who were then arrested.
Mm-hmm.
There was a really, really interesting case where a guy who was running drug money for the Russian mob who was a I suppose he still is. Maybe he lost his license to fly, but he's a helicopter pilot, for instance, and who was arrested. Federal
arrest. So we've known this about Trump forever.
Yeah, federal arrest.
Okay.
Then gets arrested.
Right.
Gets ready for his trial. Trump pulled some strings. Got the trial moved to an entirely different state where neither of the two states where it had jurisdiction.
Oh.
Got it moved to a state where Trump's sister is a federal judge, so the case gets, you know, got commuted to, like, you know, an ankle bracelet.
Yeah.
Then mysteriously he gets a free Trump Tower. He just moved into Trump Tower with a free penthouse.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, it, so these things have been, you know,
right.
So my point is that, you know, this stuff is, so it was neither new nor, you know, this stuff is just,
right.
Nobody reported on before. So it's neither new for him, right? Nor are there no antecedents in history for this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And people are just making it sound like it's, you know, this type of fascism, it has dimensions. It has corners. We can understand it. And they're making it look as though it's like this new animal that we've never seen before. And that it's breaking the mold. It's not breaking the mold. It has antecedents. It has antecedents. It has things that influenced its formation. It has, he's doing things that we've seen before, mm-hmm. both here and abroad. And people are making it sound as though, and people who say we don't fear him, mm-hmm. or we shouldn't fear him, mm-hmm. or are just complete nincompoops. People who believe somehow that he is merely like a symptom and not also a cause, people like Greenberg, right? Like, who merely say that he is merely a symptom, Greenwald. People who say he's merely, and he's also, and there are many, many people who say this, that he's merely one of the symptoms and not also a cause. He's both. I mean, I agree with him.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I agree with him. It was right. An excellent piece.
Uh-huh.
I mean,
yeah.
So,
I don't remember exactly the article.
It's like saying Hitler was a. It's exactly the same as saying Franco or Hitler or Mussolini
yeah.
was a symptom. Well, of course, they were all symptoms, but they were also causes. I mean, like, you know, anyone.
Yeah. I suspect Greenwald would agree with it on that level. I just don't.
Oh, but the omission.
Yeah.
But the okay. omission was like.
All right. I don't remember the article.
The omission was so glaring that it just it's like, oh God, you know, the language of it, although excellent.
Yeah.
I mean, the point it was making
but
was
he left
superb.
Out what
you
say, yeah.
Well, he left out the the other half.
Was this something I posted?
Yes.
Or? Okay, I'll have to check back. I don't remember.
Yes.
Actually,
I mean, it was a superbly formulated
mm-hmm.
first half.
Yeah.
And the second half was everything else.
Mm-hmm.
It's what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what he's doing, as I say, is stuff we've seen before.
Right.
I mean, everybody, I have friends in Europe who, you know, like this friend who lived through the Ceausescu nightmare,
mm-hmm.
and her mother said, "This is how it starts." She still lived there.
Mm-hmm.
I said, "What's your mom think of this?" She said, "This is how it starts."
Yeah.
I mean, you're idiots.
Because the danger
you people are idiots.
The danger is
Trump,
but simultaneously, I'm not personally worried about him. I'm worried about what comes after, because you're probably going to get someone who is much smarter, much better at PR.
Perhaps.
Much better.
Well, you're seeing it across the world, too, like in Brazil.
Yeah, yeah. Like, oh,
no.
Yeah, don't get me wrong.
Well, Brazil is...
Oh, yeah, don't get me wrong. I don't... in fact, actually, this is one of Greenwald's points,
mm-hmm.
which was that there are controls here...
Oh, I know what
...that don't exist in places like Brazil.
Well, we have a history of... Of what's called democracy. It's the flawed capitalist. There is a history that we have. Brazil was a dictatorship going until like 1975.
Oh, just a few decades.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have a tradition. The tradition and the history and the consciousness of it does count. So it would be harder here than in Brazil. So it's argued.
It takes a little bit longer.
It may take a little bit longer here
with Brazil. It's
right. Right.
I mean, you got a guy with Brazil, you've got a guy hearkening back to the juntas, saying, that's what we need to go back to.
People
are voting for him. It's
like
terrifying.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, even Duterte,
the
problem with Brazil is that there's a model.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's a little messier with Duterte. Like, where in Brazil, there's this wide-ranging model. Which is strange to me.
You mean when it was a dictatorship?
He's saying, look.
Yeah.
And he was a general.
Yeah.
And so he's saying, look,
yeah.
I could be a general back there again, and people are voting for him.
Right.
It's frightening.
Yeah.
But in any event.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know how we got onto Trump, but I guess the danger of folks I guess it does kind of play into the idea of, like, if you vote with wild ignorance.
Yeah, you're doing it.
You know, I suppose it does fit a little bit here, but
yeah. Was this the art? I'm getting confused by the articles, but there was there's another article now in The Intercept.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a different article where they talk about with all the horrifying rhetoric of Bolsonaro in Brazil, he has a lot of support, and it's interesting why that happens, because, and that's kind of a two people do vote against their interests. This particular one was not written by Greenwald. It was for somebody else, someone who lives in
that
Brazil.
That wasn't Greenwald? I thought Greenwald wrote another one.
No. I probably posted one. I did post one by Greenwald, but I'm talking about there's another article that I didn't post.
We'll have to read that one. Yeah.
It's up there now by someone, I think, who lives in Brazil.
Yeah,
How people vote against their interests, which they did it with Trump, really, also. They voted
of course
against
they
their interests. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and they, you know, they talk.
It's breathless.
Yeah,
it's absolutely breathless.
And because I think, well, I don't know. I don't want to give a glib explanation for it, but I think in Brazil it's part of that get tough on criminals type thing. That was part.
Well,
of
that's how. Yeah. That's the lujeté. Right. Yeah. That's it. That's it.
Sorry. I don't speak French.
No, that's the term.
Oh, yeah.
That's the term. Okay. That's where it happens.
Oh, yeah, getting tough on
criminals. That's what happens.
That's question right. Criminal element.
But that it appeals to people.
You know, that's when it happens. Now, like, it's them.
Okay.
Don't get tough on them.
Yeah, to these
it doesn't matter who it is.
But the point
is
it starts out with this, and then...
Right.
Yeah,
so why is that? It's because people don't see alternatives to that kind of crap. When the mainstream parties fail a population, the population starts turning towards psycho stuff.
And on top of that,
that's where Trump comes
especially
from, and
in
that's
this,
where Bolsonaro.
No, I agree with
especially
that.
In this era of especially instability, political instability, economic instability, social instability.
Yeah.
People go and they're just like, you know, people seem to get just like, I'm done. This guy says he's going to bring order.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I would even argue to that point. I would even argue that in the most I don't like this word because it doesn't really, you know. I guess it's cynical analysis but you can see it.
Yeah.
But you can see it is that sometimes you can see a pattern where this is all by design, where they tank the thing first.
Oh yeah. Problematic solution.
They do it intentionally.
Yep.
And then capture it.
Yeah, you go, you create a problem, you get a reaction, and then you propose a solution, which just so happens to be the one you want.
Yeah, they instigate chaos get people. Oh, yeah.
And then you capture it on the upshot.
Right, yeah.
And I think that's a good place to end. All right.